Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Before we begin, I've got some big news. I have just written my first book, Happy Not Perfect, Upgrade Your Mind, Challenge Your Thoughts, and Free Yourself from Anxiety. The book will teach you my easy flex method for more flexible thoughts that will help change your thinking to transform your life. You'll read about my own journey from stress, low self-esteem, and negativity, and how I was able to turn it around by learning how my mind worked from world-leading experts like my podcast guests and understanding what would help my mind work better for me. If you've enjoyed my show, please pre-order the book in the link in the show notes. I can't wait for you to read it and start practicing a flexible mindset.
The mind is not the brain and the body. Mind is something that is always with us. So we can't have the same rules for brain and body as we can for mind. You know, there's certain symptoms of cardiovascular issues that you and I can manifest in the same way. In other words, two patients can have the same heart symptoms and heart treatment. But when it comes to mind, if you're depressed and I'm depressed, it's not the same thing. It's simply not an it. It's not a heart disease. Depression is a symptom or a warning signal of an underlying cause. And that's where it's different.
Hello and welcome to the Not Perfect podcast. I'm your host, Poppy Jamie, the founder of award-winning mindfulness app, Happy Not Perfect. And this show is about upgrading our mind, our energy, and our understanding of how we can live life to our fullest potential. Over the next few weeks, I'm interviewing thought leaders, scientists, nutritionists, and experts to share tips and tricks for how we can shed the old and step into the new. I hope you join me on the journey. On today's show, we have a very special and interesting guest, Dr. Caroline Leaf. She has been researching the mind-brain connection and the science of thought for over 30 years. Dr. Leaf is a best-selling author and neuroscientist. We're going to be discussing her brilliant new book, Cleaning Up Your Mental Mess, 5 Simple Scientifically Proven Steps to Reduce Anxiety, Stress, and Toxic Thinking. Honestly, this is one of the most insightful books I've read on the science behind the mind and strategies for better mind management. If you like knowing the how and the why behind the mind, then Dr. Caroline is your perfect teacher. I'm really excited to dive in and learn more about her 5-step protocol to clearing up our mental mess. What's your favorite quote and one you return to often and why?
anyone who knows me will know I say it all the time, and it's profound. And it's you cannot control the events and circumstances of life. Never been more evident than our current situation, but you can control your mind, how you respond to the events and circumstances of life. So that's something I say so many times, and it's what I teach. It's foundational to my life.
What's a life lesson you've been reminded of recently, and why?
The importance of really being authentic, which we know is like everyone says that at the moment, but honestly being able to recognize that we can manage our minds and that we can actually look inside of ourselves and we can become decent humans by really analyzing how we are thinking and feeling and choosing and functioning. And that's for me been a very profound realization. The mind's malleable. You can, and I've been in this field for 38 years, but it's really hit me recently just with even more so how important it is that we recognize that we're not hopeless. We're not dancing to our DNA. We really have a lot of power and ability when we understand our mind and how malleable it is. So that's really hit me lately with just a lot of things that have been happening.
I love that. You're not dancing to your DNA. How do you define happiness?
It's a sense of mental peace. So I think like a lot of us have recognized this era has been one of making happiness an extrinsic thing that we have to get and put into us. You know, there's been that sort of positive toxic psychology movement and the whole sort of almost distortion around the wellness era and pop psychology and so much good in that too. But it's led to this thing that it's one thing that I've got to get and put into me. Meanwhile, it's a whole organic process and it's being able to recognize, hey, if I feel depressed, that's okay. Embrace it because in that's the message. And in doing that, you'll find happiness, which sounds so crazy. So in embracing the depression, and the anxiety and all those emotions that are difficult to deal with and we've been told are bad, I believe happiness is part of happiness is being okay with feeling those, embracing them and actually finding the message behind them, seeing them as symptoms of an underlying cause. I believe happiness is getting into that mental space where you can take the messes of the past and reconstruct them so that they don't influence your future. Mm-hmm. Happiness is also being so that really cheesy, but that's been really happy with just the little things in life. Are you able to just like look at the tiny little things in life and appreciate them? So it's a lot of those things that add up and bring a sense of mental peace. But I can't stress enough, Poppy, how it should include the humanity that we have, which you talk about so much as well, of the fact that it's not all just trying to be wonderful, and happiness is also being able to be sad. And to accept that and to see that as part of your life experience and your story.
Really, that, and we're going to talk about this a bit in more detail, but I especially love the point about not having to bring the past with you, being able to construct a new future. And you obviously, your book creates so many tools for that. And that being such a big part of happiness, because it is so true. Dragging the past along with us is one of the biggest reasons for our unhappiness.
Yes.
So, your book, it opens up with probably one of the best quotes I've read, and I'm going to read it. And I just want to ask why you started the book with it. We can go 3 weeks without food, 3 days without water, 3 minutes without oxygen, but we can't even go 3 seconds without thinking. Why did you want to start the book with this?
Because it's such a truth, and it's something that we don't recognize what mind is, and we don't recognize. We haven't been taught, we haven't been trained in what mind is. And it's in science, it's called the hard question. And I don't believe it's the hard question of science. 38 years ago, I started challenging and saying the mind is not the hard question of science. The mind is the most obvious question of science and the most obvious question of life. Your mind never stops. So Poppy, when we're consciously awake, it is going. When we're asleep, it's still going. Your mind never stops. Your mind is behind everything that you do. It's its first cause. Our mind is working now as we interact. Our mind is working when we woke up this morning and had our coffee and had breakfast and did whatever you did today already, and the conversations with family and work, what you do, what you eat, your exercise, even the effectiveness of exercise and food is determined by your mind. Your digestive system is controlled by your mind. Everything. So if we don't get a handle on mind, we're going to be in a mental mess. And it's very evident that the world is a mess. And being human means it's messy. We've all got mental messes. And if we start understanding that the mental mess comes from mind and mind is always going, then we have to study mind. We have to understand what it is, what mind management is in order to clean up that mental mess. So if our mind never stops, why don't we understand more about what that thing is that's constantly on?
Just to kind of dive into this idea of, you know, mental mess, you write actually mental health problems haven't necessarily got worse, but they've got different. And I'd love to kind of go into that. Why do you think there is more mental mess than ever? And how has it become different in this modern world we're living in?
Okay, so yes, mental health has always been with us. As long as humans are alive and living and interacting, there's going to be mental health problems. And mental health problems aren't some scary disease. Mental health problems are just the fact that we go through life and we react, and we don't always react like we should. We should be more responsive, responding as opposed to reacting. So, and also every generation has got certain issues that they're facing, which are very challenging. So from the beginning of time, mankind has been battling with their mind. It's not something new. Mental health is not on the rise. It's just different. And how is it different? It's because we're living with different problems and we have different reactions. But the basic core thing is that if you're human, you will have good and bad experiences. Every experience and response becomes part of who you are, becomes part of your mind, becomes part of your brain, and becomes part of your body. So every experience is built into three places through your mind, which is very profound. And that's something that we're also not taught. And when we understand that, it makes so much sense, all the other stuff. So my core tenet in that particular statement is that we have a philosophy over the last 38 years that mental health isn't it, like cancer or diabetes. We've had that message of, and it's come from what we call the biomedical model. It began around about 38, 40, actually almost 50 years ago, where instead of seeing the whole person's narrative and the whole person's context and what you're going through and the experiences and how you're processing in your unique way, and if it was adverse, obviously you have an adverse reaction and you're trying to cope and all that stuff, that was all put aside, and what was focused on was the research on the brain, and everything became very neuro-reductionistic. So everything became focused around the biology. Our understanding of the brain and the body has increased so much, and it's profound and it's wonderful, but the mind is not the brain and the body. Mind is something that is always with us. So we can't have the same rules for brain and body as we can for mind. You know, there's certain symptoms of cardiovascular issues that you and I can manifest in the same way. In other words, two patients can have the same heart symptoms and heart treatment. But when it comes to mind, if you're depressed and I'm depressed, it's not the same thing. It's simply not an it. It's not a heart disease. Depression is a symptom or a warning signal of an underlying cause. And that's where it's different. But if we take the narrative away and we take the whole mind thing away and we just say, okay, you've got symptoms of depression and five little questions or 10 little questions, tick, tick, tick. Okay, you are clinically depressed. So within a few seconds, you get a diagnosis like heart disease. That means you've been given a disease label to validate a massive experience, but you haven't validated, you've invalidated the whole thing by giving it a disease label. And so we see now that one of the greatest negative impacts of removing the importance of focusing on you and your story and what you're going through and your context versus just the biological reaction in your brain and body, which will happen, but that's not the cause of your depression. The cause of your depression or anxiety or schizophrenia or whatever it is that you've anger, frustration, on edge, burnout is something that you're going through. It's a whole story. So we're not sitting with an increase in mental health problems. We're sitting with an increase in the side effects of mismanagement of mental health, and we can rectify that.
One of the points which really, really stood out to me, because, you know, if I'm on social media, I'll see a lot of people say, I'm on medication because I have an imbalance of serotonin. And yes. In your book, you quite explicitly say this isn't quite accurate in the way that people are diagnosing and saying they need medication for that. What are your thoughts around that?
Yes, it's been the message of it started in the 50s when they discovered some of one of the first antipsychotics called Pramazine, and then fast forward to the 90s when we had Prozac, and that just launched a whole industry of finding medications that altered brain function. So they are psychotropic medications are psychoactive, which means that they're not fixing something in the brain. This is the difference. They are changing the brain, but they're not fixing something in the brain. But the chemical imbalance myth, and honestly, it really is a myth. It's not scientific. And even some of the top psychiatrists in the world will deny ever saying that that's the case. So the scientists, and even the ones that were advocates of it, will now deny that they ever said it was truth, because there's so much scientific evidence evidence to the contrary. And what those drugs do, they're psychoactive, which means that they do change the brain. Whatever you put into the brain changes it. Right now, just us speaking's changed the brain. Your brain never stays the same. Your brain is neuroplastic. So, and how does it change? Because of your mind. Your mind is how you're responding. Your mind is your thinking, feeling, and choosing. So right now, maybe it's a good time to just define mind is how you think, feel, and choose. So it's think, feel, choose. To cover three fingers up. When you think, you feel. When you think and feel, you choose. Those three are never separated. When you think, you'll feel. When you think and feel, you will choose. That's mind. Okay, so that mind is a quantum gravitational field, and it basically moves through your brain and your body. So right now, as you are listening to me, I'm speaking and sending out words and visual images, and that's coming at you as electromagnetic light waves and auditory sound waves, and your mind grabs that. You think, feel, choose. That then generates energy through your brain, and your brain then responds. So, and how does it respond? By changing. So the whole chemical imbalance thing doesn't work, because your brain is constantly changing and responding, and you are building in networks into your brain to help you cope in that situation. And if it's an adverse circumstance, you're building whatever you can to survive, but it's obvious, it's very often not the best way of responding. And then that gets linked with shame and guilt and all these things that can go on and affect how we function, but it's got very real mental real estate. So therefore, when we talk about chemical imbalance, we're taking away all the humanity. Saying it's a chemical imbalance is removing that humanity. Psychoactive drugs will change the brain because they numb the brain, and the brain physically adapts, and not in a good way. So people have experienced it, and there's a lot of work all over the world showing that when people come off an antidepressant, for example, or off an antipsychotic, that they are experiencing terrible withdrawal symptoms, which is not the disease coming back. It is the effects of the brain being changed by the drug and the brain trying to heal itself.
You know, for those that are really depressed, that need antidepressants, actually, you have just completed clinical trials on another method that actually reduced depression by 80% or 82%?
Yeah, 81%, yeah.
81%, which is absolutely phenomenal. And there are zero side effects, zero chemicals involved. I would love for you to tell us about the 5-step method that you've had such enormous life-changing success with.
So what basically I've done for 38 years is try to come against everything we've been talking. And I started out in South Africa working with people with traumatic brain injuries. So their brains were very damaged. And in the 80s, we were told the brain couldn't change. And so I just said, I don't believe that. So can you believe it? Back in the 80s, they didn't believe the brain could change. It was only in the mid 90s that it was actually accepted that your brain is neuroplastic. And now we hear about neuroplasticity all the time and brain changing and all that stuff all the time. And we know with exercise, it changes, and with where you think it changes and positive thinking and all this kind of thing. But in the 80s, that wasn't the case. So I worked with people with tremendously severe brain damage that had been written off by the medical fraternity. And I basically, through just pure mind management, teaching them how to use their mind, to change their mind, to change their brain. Fast forward, I did a bunch of research over that period up into the 2000s, where I was looking at mind-brain techniques for helping to change brain and improve learning, function, cognitive, emotional, social, et cetera, et cetera. And I showed a 35 to 75% improvement in how a person is managing mentally and academically. So not only were people getting managing their trauma and the depression and stuff associated with just battling with life, but there was also massive improvement in their intellectual function. So with all that having said, I took what I have done since the 80s, refined over the years. The system, the 5-step system of the neurocycle, is based on 38 years of research. It's not just like this. It is simple, but each step is done sequentially, because each step is taking you deeper and deeper into helping you to use your mind to change your brain. So if you just do one of the steps half-heartedly, you won't get the benefits. You'll recognize each of the steps, as I'm sure you did when you read through them, but the power is in how they combine, the order in which you do them, how you do them, the time you spend doing them, and how often you do them in a very self-regulated way. And when you do that, what I showed was that my subjects in my study, they got to the point where they could control anxiety and depression and burnout and toxic stress and anger and hovering and all these things you can manage those up to 81%, which is profound, because if you can just get 10% control over your life, you'll feel like $1 million. So you can imagine 81%. So at the end of our study, our subjects had in the experimental group, they had got to the point where they could turn around and say, okay, I still feel depressed, actually, and I'm still feeling really anxious, but I know why, and I know how to manage it. By the time they'd moved through the entire 9 weeks of the study, and then at the 6 month point, they actually felt that they had this under control, and they felt peace and a sense of internal peace.
So let's dive into the five steps, because I wanted to also make a point of how brilliant I thought the word neurocycling is to describe your process. Because just like, you know, the recycle process in plastic, it is constantly looped. You know, plastic never dies, so it constantly just recycles, turns into something better, recycles, turns into something better, etc. I just thought it was brilliant, this idea, and it reminds us that this is a constant process, something that we can repeat for the rest of our lives, basically.
Yes. So neurocycle, neuro means brain, cycle means to cycle, to move through. And what you do is you constantly move, you're moving through five steps: gather awareness, reflect, write, recheck, and active reach. Gather awareness, gather. The word gather is like, if you think of gathering apples into a basket, or it's an embracing kind of concept. It's a very friendly, it's a very all-encompassing, it's a very, hey, come, let me gather you into my arms. So it's a very much, don't fear what's going on in your life, gather awareness of it in order to get control over it. What humans hate, we hate uncertainty. We're frightened of change, and we are so scared of the unknown. So I'm saying, to get over that, gather awareness. Gather awareness of the fact that you feel uncertain, that you don't like change, and that all is frightening. And gather awareness of every emotion you have, feel them, embrace them. Because now here's the key of embrace, of gathering awareness. I embrace those, I gather awareness to find out why and what can I do about it. So why and what can I do about it? So immediately I'm making myself progress forward. I'm thinking, feeling, and choosing about why I'm thinking, feeling, and choosing to feel depressed at that moment through looking at the warning signals in my emotions and in my body.
Can you give us an example of the why? Because a lot of people say, oh, I feel so anxious, I don't know why.
Yes, that's, and then they don't go further. They just give up and get into a cycle. And yes. I'm not criticizing anyone. This is not, if you're feeling guilt or shame or condemnation, even if from the drug question earlier on, don't feel bad about guilt or shame. Grab that guilt or shame and make it work for you in the way that I'm describing. So when people say, I don't know why I feel depressed, this is what you do. When the depression hits us, we're so overwhelmed with the emotion that we get a lot of neurochemical chaos in our brain. And that neurochemical chaos fogs our brain's ability to actually think clearly. It's like if you're driving through a storm and you have no windscreen wipers. So if I have the depression feeling and I don't embrace them, I'm driving through that storm with no windscreen wipers. Putting the windscreen wipers on, what I'm doing is I'm saying, okay, I accept the depression. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Give yourself permission. You're putting on the windscreen wipers, you're seeing a little bit. Then you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to stand back and I'm going to observe myself in this depression. So I'm going to do what I call multiple perspective advantage. Split yourself in two. See yourself as the strong person that has Caroline, who's all together. And you have the moments in our life where Poppy, Caroline, whoever's listening, where we've been together, where we've held it together, where we've given someone else advice. When someone's come to you and you, this calm, amazing person, and you're giving this incredible advice, go into that person when you feel this depression. Okay.
Imagining yourself speaking to yourself.
That's it. Exactly that. Thank you. You said it nice and simplistically. That imagination and that visualization, see it happening, is actually building into your brain. So you are building that into your brain. And as you build that into your brain, you are now creating brain resilience. You are rebuilding you're rebuilding balance back into your brain. The windscreen wipe is now going like this, and you're still depressed, but now you're in a state to go to step two. Mm-hmm. And step two is reflect. And reflect is a massively profound, transformational, and integrative word. It's not just a little word. It's a massive embodiment of ask, answer, discuss. So the person on the bed who's sitting on the bed, the other you, the visualization of the other you, says to the one in the bed who's depressed, okay, let's get curious together. Let's not get furious. Let's get curious. Let's do a mental autopsy. Let's put these thoughts on trial. So let's start by saying, let's describe in detail why you feel depressed. Give me more words. Give me more emotional words. Give me more feeling words. Let's start unpacking that. Then now let's start asking why. Why do I feel like that? And let's answer ourselves and let's discuss it. I feel depressed because I just feel like I've got too much to do, or I don't like what I'm doing and I just wish I could have a break. Why? Ask, answer, discuss. Ask, answer, discuss. And that's what reflect is. And it's deep, going deep and deep and deep. It's digging into your brain. It's drawing things out of your brain and out of the non-conscious mind, which is the most intelligent and biggest part of us. And right in the middle of the non-conscious mind is this huge wisdom that every human has. We wired for love. We wired for survival. We wired for optimism. We wired for wisdom. This has been proven scientifically by Nobel Prize laureates. In the middle of who you are, the midst of poppies, thinking, feeling, choosing, is this world of wisdom, this huge forest of wisdom. On the outside are all our experiences that aren't always wise. And what we do with this five-step neurocycle is we start getting through the foggy parts on the outside and we start diving into the wisdom. So the person sitting on the bed is asking the questions and helping that person to answer. And so you go through ask, answer, discuss. And then the third part is write. We all know we must write.
And can I just say on that last step, it's hard work. Reflect is not easy. And that's sometimes that can feel uncomfortable. Keep going into different layers of like why and being a bit honest with yourself.
It's very, very hard. And I'm glad you mentioned that. And that's why we do it on two levels. And the one level is you do it just quickly for a few moments, not for too long, just to get yourself out of bed and going. And then what you do is you then allocate, if this is a pattern in your life, if this is happening quite a lot lately, this pattern of this depression and overwhelm and burnout and, you know, these big words that we use, anxiety. People ask me questions. They always give the big questions. Oh, I'm anxious. How do I deal with anxiety? How do I deal with burnout? How to deal with depression? Those are just the warning signals. You're going to have to do the work of how to manage the moment so you can get through the day, but then you're going to have to do the work over 63 days because it takes 63 days to actually find out why I'm consistently feeling depression or anxiety, to find the root of where it started. And that doesn't happen overnight. That happens, the research I've done shows, it takes cycles of 63 days. So habits do not form in 21 days. New behavior changes do not form in 21 days. It takes 63. And I explain this very clearly in the book. So in that moment of depression on the bed, to get you out of the bed, you can do this 5 steps in 5 minutes just to get you going. You're not going to solve the problem, but you'll get to a point where you can get out of bed. But then from sometime today, start doing a 63-day neurocycle. And that is then to do the 5 steps, very organized. You sit down with a little journal. I call it a neurocycle journal. It can be any kind of thing to write in. And you decide, okay, I'm going to allocate 15 to 45 minutes maximum to do that hard work of finding out why I'm constantly feeling depressed and what am I going to do about it. So I'm going to embrace, process and reconceptualize daily for minimum of 15, maximum of 45 minutes, not longer, because it's too emotionally draining and you don't want to get stuck in it.
And what's an example of getting your notepad? You would start writing, today I'm feeling depressed because, and the little, the reflection you've done, you'd now put it down on paper. You'd actually really go through it and allow your brain just to write, kind of free writing almost.
Exactly. That's exactly what you do. You want to let your brain, you want to pull your brain on paper. And that's that third step that you can do in the daily over 63 days and in that 5 minute moments. Just grab it. That's why I say, always have a journal handy or do it in your phone. It doesn't matter if you type it in your phone. I have a whole system in my phone that I also do. So if I can do it quickly on my phone, whatever. So that third step of writing, you don't want to get it all fancy. You just put it on paper. So I've developed a technique called the Metacog, which I also talk about in the book and I explain. But the Metacog is a system that I've developed over 38 years as well, which is like writing like a plant, where you put a circle in the middle and then you just do branches around that. And you just, all the branches link. This is the key to getting into the depths of your brain, is all the branches link and you write the words on the branches. And even if it's just this huge mess, that is okay. The right step is get your brain on paper. And the fourth step is then, okay, let me see if I can make sense of what I've just written. And it's going, each step is now going deeper and deeper and deeper. And it's a sorting step where you're looking for patterns and triggers and activators and it's a reprocessing step. So what should I do about this? So I can't solve all this today, but what can I do today just to get through? And then you conclude with step 5, which is the active reach. And the active reach is an action, active action that you reach into a space of mental peace. So it's active and it's reaching into a space of mental peace.
And what's an example of an active reach?
So let's say that the depression is, that you take the depression example and you go through and you say, okay, I'm depressed because I'm feeling really overwhelmed and it's just been too much going on. There's too many demands on me. I'm trying to, everyone's trying, wants everything from me, whatever. And you find from the reflect and the right step that that's, it's still not all the answer, but it's only five, you've done this in 5 minutes. So you're not going to get everything. In my recheck, I start seeing, okay, so it's definitely related to, I'm trying to meet everyone's needs. So then the active reach would be, you don't have to meet everyone's needs. So you type that into your phone if you're using the app, or you write it down in your neurocycle journal and you put it somewhere. I would, if you're not using the app, I would recommend you put it into your reminders on your phone or write it where you can carry it with you all day. And during the course of today, you bring up that little statement and you just reread it at least 7 times, which takes you 7 seconds. And then you try and practice that. So every time you're feeling this overwhelm, this morning you just worked out that one of the reasons for the overwhelm is because you're trying to fix everything for you. You're trying to be everything to everyone or whatever it may be. And that's, then you remind yourself, I don't have to be everything to everyone. So it's a statement, and then also hang it onto a visual hook, like something beautiful. I love white roses. So I tend to hook that statement that I'm working on. You don't have to be everything to everyone. And then I immediately visualize a white rose, and that does all kinds of things in your brain and it gives you a hook. So it becomes an anchor. And then each day that can change and can progress. But then if I'm finding it's a pattern, what I will do is then go back and do those 5 steps over the 15 to 45 minutes every day for 21 days. After 21 days, you then go into a 42-day period to take you to day 63, where you basically do active reaches for each day for 7 seconds to 7 minutes a day. So the thing is that in the brain, unless you, what we're doing with the 5 steps of the neurocycle is you are pulling up the toxic thought through looking at the warning signals, the emotions, the behavior, I mean, the emotions and the body reaction, the behaviors. The behaviors are all these memories, the emotions that you get more detail on. So you go from warning signals to behaviors and the information in the branches to the perspective, to the roots. In the over 21 days, you're doing this constant every day. I see a few more branches, a bit more of the perspective, a bit more of the root. Day by day 21, you have deconstructed and reconstructed. You've reconceptualized this into, okay, I am feeling depressed because this is what's happening in my life and this is how I've been reacting, but this is how I'm going to react. So you take, energy is never lost. This is toxic energy. In the 5 steps daily over 21 days, you deconstruct and reconstruct. You embrace, process, and reconceptualize, and you build a healthy new thought. You transfer the energy from the toxic that's holding you back into the healthy that moves you forward. When you do that, you change your cortisol levels, you change your DHEA levels, you control your hypothalamic, your HPA axis, the stress axis. You change the brain. We see it in QEEGs. I've got all this in my book. You change your DNA, you change your cellular health, your right down to the level of telomeres, which is involved in, is the physical part of our DNA that responds to our emotions. The more we manage our mind, the healthier our telomeres in our DNA, the healthier our body. So the healthier our mind, the healthier our body. And you can do that in as little as 9 weeks. So when you talked in the beginning about improving how you function by 81%, I'm talking about when you do these 5 steps in the moment, like I described, and daily, to get to the root cause, you then, and after 63 days, you find another one that you work on. In 63 days, you find another one. You are then changing your blood, your brain, your DNA, everything in a very positive and constructive way. And then the other thing that is profound for mental health that is very unspoken about, and we haven't even touched on it much at all, and that is brain building, which is the first part of the book, where you use the 5 steps to learn new information, which is absolutely critical for brain resilience. If you want to, when you go to the gym, you're building health into your brain. You're building all this great strength into your brain. When you brain build, which is when you take any information, like you could take my book, use the 5 steps to learn the information in my book. That would be brain building. So you could take maybe half an hour each day and study that content and through the 5 steps, exactly, and I explain exactly how to do that. And then you're building knowledge into your brain. As you build more and more knowledge into your brain, you see that you create more resilience. So for example, my patients that came to me, I didn't dive straight into the trauma or the toxic habits or the things we've been talking about now. They'd come to me with whatever, and I'd say, okay, first, let me teach you how to brain build. So you brain build first, and then you go into a toxic trauma. So for example, this morning when I woke up, before I did the little, why am I so anxious and can't sleep, I did a little bit of brain building. So I took a research article and spent about 15 minutes doing a bit of brain building, calmed myself down, got myself into a brain resilient state, did a little bit of breathing. Then I worked out, why am I so anxious? And then I could go back to sleep. And so it was a very constructive progress moving forward, but it's taken time to do that. But I did conquered that in about 45 minutes. In the past, I would have been up the rest of the night worrying and woken up and had an awful day. That's not going to happen because I've mind managed.
I just think it's so brilliant. And the brain building, again, is such a step, which I think, me included, we miss out. We'll immediately try to problem solve, and then we get terrified because we can't problem solve instantly. And what your method does is give that precursor, like the brain building of learning, before you then try and tackle your thoughts.
Exactly.
And it's so backed by science, which also gives us such confidence that doing these steps really does work, and you just got to stick with them, like with anything.
And it's so simple. When you get into this, I cannot encourage people enough. It will change your life. You should be neurocycling all the time. It doesn't replace therapy. It doesn't replace other techniques. It simply makes them work better. It helps you get your mind back. It really does. It helps you get your mind back, which a lot of us feel we've lost in this day and age.
And I just thought, you know, one of the brilliant quotes you also include in your book, which I think summarizes so much of what you've said today, you write a Marie Curie quote, and it says, "Nothing in life is to be feared. It is only to be understood. Now is the time to understand more so that we may fear less." And I just want to say thank you so much for helping us fear less by helping us to understand during this interview. Where is the best place to find you in your app would be brilliant, because I know we'd all be interested in diving in further.
Absolutely. Well, the book's available wherever books are sold. You can go to cleaningupyourmentalmess.com and then it takes you to all the links. My Instagram handle's Dr. Caroline Leaf and everything's on there. So if you go to Instagram, you can get to the webpage, drleaf.com, and the podcast and everything. And then the app is on the App Store, iTunes, Google Play, and it used to be called Switch, but we've changed the name to Neurocycle. The app and the book together work as a companion, because a team, because the one is me walking you through it, and then you've got all the science and you've got the written version in the book. We can send you all those links as well.
Perfect. And I'll put them all in the show notes for anyone who's listening. Thank you so much, Dr. Leaf. This has been brilliant.
Thank you so much. So lovely to have met you, and thank you for a great discussion.
Thank you for listening. It would be a huge support if you wouldn't mind rating, subscribing, and sharing this podcast. I also would love to hear from you. So please find me at Poppy Jamie on Instagram, DM me, and I would love to hear your thoughts on any of the topics that we discuss. Download Happy Not Perfect, my app that's designed to boost your mood and help you sleep and give you mindfulness in less than 5 minutes. It's packed full of science-backed tools and rituals to give your mind the care it needs. Sending lots of love and energy. See you next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.